Are you ready to talk Padres baseball?
We've got you covered.
Tonight, it's game 3 of 4 against the Rockies at Petco. And after last night's walk-off win, our host Jesse Agler would like to see more of the same. But we'll just have to see.
You know, I get it. You're telling me not to put the cart before the horse, which is good advice.
Also in studio, we've got Bill Center, who will use his superpowers of observation and knowledge to help us get ready for the game.
I'm not a big superhero person.
No, but I mean, you don't have to be.
Now, broadcasting from the AMR studio, it's Padre Social Hour, presented by United Airlines, with your hosts, Jesse Agler and Bill Center.
Welcome to Padres Social Hour, presented by United. We are live at the AMR studio at Petco Park. We've got a walk-off win to talk about, and that is always fun.
And that was a great ending last night. I love that one.
You went from a really low moment as a fan to a really high moment, and you only had to wait like 6.5, 7 minutes between them, which is nice as opposed to, you know, feeling down and then, you know, 6 innings later or something like that, feeling better about the situation. It was cool. It was a fun night last night for a lot of reasons. Probably the place to start is at the end, and we'll get to that in due time for sure. Want to welcome everybody in. Padres 2, Rockies 1 last night. And how about this? Before we even get into like the details and the specifics of the thing, Bill Center, just the second walk-off win of the season for the Padres this year.
You know what? I saw that in the notes or when they said it afterwards, and I was I immediately started going back in my mind, and it's like, wow, that's
crazy, right?
Yeah, because like last year they had 6 or 7. I mean, that was sort of one of their trademarks last year.
And over the last several years, they're one of the teams, I think the Reds and the Padres, dating back to 2000, whatever, that have more walk-off wins than anybody else. But it's really not been the story this year. And there's nothing to that, I don't think, other than, you know, whatever. But it's kind of strange to, you know, to think about that this was just the second walk-off win of the year. Even stranger than that, the last 3 walk-off wins for the Padres, which obviously goes back to late last season, Corey Spangenberg has scored the winning run. Three straight times in walk-off wins for the Padres, and that's relevant to last night because he's, what, one of 2 guys maybe on this team that scores on that play last night? 3 guys, Jankowski, Melvin Upton. I don't know that there's anybody else who comes in and scores on that ground ball.
Kashner.
He would say that.
Right.
Cash would say that he could do it, and maybe he could.
And he could do it.
Okay, you're saying yes. I'm saying I'd like to see it. But you're right. I mean, it's a small handful of guys.
Right.
How about that?
Very small.
That would be able to come in and score.
And not only the fact that but the timing of it, the break that he got when he was leaving. Everything about that play was just perfect. And to be perfect, I'd rather see a game end on a hustle play like that than on a big hit.
So you would have enjoyed this more than if Brett Wallace would have hit the ball over the fence.
Yeah,
I'd love
to see games end on close plays at the plate.
What if it just got over the fence? That's a close play.
No. I like to see hustle plays. I love hustle plays.
That's also not realistic because none of Brett Wallace's home runs go just over the fence. They go like 50 rows back.
Right.
So that was my bad. That wasn't a plausible scenario I laid out for you. No, I get what you're saying. And we had a couple last year, right? I'm remembering the one against the Mets, and it might have been the Despaigne no-hitter attempt game, right? Alonso,
right.
A little dribbler off the right side, close play. There was one against Arizona. I might be crossing wires and mixing them up. But I feel like there were a couple last year, and you mentioned they had a ton of walk-off hits last year, or walk-off moments, I guess, where you had a couple close plays at the plate.
But no, I loved everything about the way Spangenberg came home on that ball, how he chose the corner of the plate. The slide was good. Everything about that was really nicely done.
No doubt. And if we're going to praise Corey Spangenberg, certainly his hustle and his speed and his aggressiveness there is one thing to praise. Another thing to be praiseworthy would be the fact that he led the bottom of the ninth off with a double, which set the table for the entire thing.
And then Barmas' bunt was a perfect get him to third. And then you bring up Wallace, who's a good contact hitter, and it just worked out perfect.
Well, it was interesting because Wallace pinch hits for Jankowski. And so here's how this played out in my mind as I'm watching it from Petco Park. All right, you get the lead double from Spangy. Barmas is up there trying to bunt, and I'm saying, okay, I get that. All you need is the one run. But I was also thinking in the back of my mind, hey, Travis Jankowski is on deck. And Travis Jankowski is a lot of things, but he is not a fly ball hitter.
Right.
And if you're getting the guy over to third with one out, you're thinking fly ball. So I'm thinking to myself, all right, hey, Murph knows more about baseball than I do, and I'm sure whatever conversation he and Dave Roberts or whoever are having down there, they're smarter than I am. But I am thinking to myself, I don't know that I think of Jankowski as a fly ball hitter, but here we are bunting to put ourselves in a fly ball situation. So what happens? They get the bunt down, and Jankowski heads back to the dugout. Brett Wallace heads to the batter's box, and I said, ah, fly ball hitter. You guys is smarter than I am. And it was cool because even though it wasn't a fly ball, and somewhat ironically, I suppose, a ground ball, that Jankowski is a ground ball, line drive kind of guy, that wins it. But I love that about baseball maybe more than anything else. And the managers probably hate it more than anything else. But it gives opportunities to dummies like you and I to second guess and first guess and sort of manage along, as we say, and kind of play out these scenarios. That's one of the best things about this
sport. Oh, yeah. And I got to, you know, the Barmas bunt. I want to get back to that because that was a tough pitch.
No doubt.
To get down on a bunt. And he did a great job of getting that ball down, and he got it exactly where you need to. It was hard. The third baseman had to come in and field it. That was the perfect bunt in that situation.
Now, of course, last night the Padres were batting in the bottom of the ninth inning because in the top of the ninth inning, Craig Kimbrell, who had not pitched in a save situation in like a month, not literally, but it had been a long time since Kimbrell pitched in a save situation, got the first two outs and then gave up a home run to Nolan Arenado to tie the game. And, I mean, it was funny because as like from a Padre perspective, you're watching this game, Kimbrell's out there, he gets the first two, you're like, oh, this thing's done. He's got it. And it was a curveball that kind of ran down by his feet, and he just yanked it out of here. I mean, that's a crazy swing from Arenado.
Well, and I think what you're saying is Nolan Arenado is becoming one of the best players in the National – I mean
– Bingo.
Great, great defensive third baseman. The fact that he hit that ball last night where he hit it and kept it fair tells you an awful lot about his skills as a ball player.
Now, are Nolan Arenado's power numbers probably a little bit inflated because of Coors Field? Absolutely. But this is a pretty good example of him not just being a mile-high guy.
Right. That's a home run anywhere.
He is one of the best hitters in baseball.
That's really a tough pitch to hit. I mean, that's a tough pitch to keep fair, for one thing.
Yeah.
And that was a good pitch. Craig Kimbrell did not make a mistake there. Craig Kimbrell threw a good pitch, and a good hitter went down and somehow kept that ball fair.
Sometimes that'll happen.
Right.
Sometimes that'll happen.
Right.
How about the pitch to strike out Carlos Gonzalez? And again, you know, look, Kimbrell blew the save. Padres win. Everything's okay, so it allows us to have, you know, some fun with these things. The pitch to strike out Cargo for the second out. This is as nasty a curveball as you will ever see.
Right.
Now, we watched it with Fox Tracks last night on Fox Sports San Diego. It was a strike. It was right on that corner.
It was on the corner.
It was on the bottom right corner of the thing, of the little Fox Tracks that goes up there. So it was a strike. Like, you know, if you had robot umpires, that's strike three to Carlos Gonzalez. When you say perfect pitch, you know, it's a full count to the hottest hitter in baseball – in a 1-0 game in the top of the ninth inning, and you say, well, he's got to deliver the perfect pitch here. That may have actually been the literal perfect pitch to Carlos Gonzalez.
That was a great pitch. And, you know, and Gonzalez's reaction to it, come on. I mean, first of all, if a pitch is that close on a full count, you have to be swinging anyway. Don't be up there begging.
Begging. I like that. I mean, it's just for the reaction.
It was a great. You're right. The reaction's great, but
his reaction is maybe the reason we keep running this, and I even want to talk about it.
Well, you know, the thing is that pitch is too close, one way or another, one to take, and two to be there griping about it. I mean, because it was on a corner, even if it's off the corner, just a little smudge.
Protect.
Right. You can't take that pitch, especially in a full count.
Yeah. No, he thought it was ball four.
Right. He thought it was
little
ball four.
Of a late call, maybe from the home plate umpire. So that's where the bat flip came in. He thought he had ball four before
but you
he
don't
heard
throw
anything.
Your hands out.
It was a little demonstrative. He was a little demonstrative.
A little?
A little bit. A little bit. A little demonstrative. But just a filthy pitch from Craig Kimbrell. Anyway, we're talking only about the ninth inning, which is unfair to Colin Ray because all he did was roll out there and have the best start of his young major league career. 7 shutout innings for Colin Ray, in which he allowed just 2 hits. And maybe the thing that I like most about his line is the 7 innings. The shutout is great. The two hits are sensational. But the fact that he was able to complete seven innings last night was huge, because it allowed the Padres to go Quackenbush 8, Kimbrel 9, and kind of save some other guys.
Well, you know, right now they're without Kelly, they're without Maurer, they were without Benoit, who might be back tonight. So if you had gone only, say, six innings, or and then you, what were you going to do? Zepchinski, Norris, and then Quackenbush? That might be your best 6, 7, 8 right now. So the fact that he was able to go seven innings, big thing. You know what interested me about last night was his pitch count. I have very seldom seen a pitcher be that much in command when he throws more balls than strikes.
Crazy, right?
Right. It was crazy. I mean, 49 balls, 47 strikes, and he only walked three guys.
He got a little bit behind in that department earlier.
Right.
And then he got better. And I think that's probably what happened.
Right.
Was that he was falling behind. The pitch count was run up. And then I don't know when it was. You know, I didn't track the moment, but whether it was in the fourth or the fifth or whatever, it clicked for him a little bit, and the efficiency came back, and he got things back under more control. But you're right, he fought through that. He didn't let it get to him. And before the game yesterday, you were there, Pat Murphy said, hey, when you're talking about a young pitcher like Colin Ray making his sixth major league start, we're not only going to look at his stat line at the end of the day to evaluate what kind of outing it was, it's going to be about, you know, his overall development. And along those lines, seeing him not get bothered by the fact that he was having to throw a lot of pitches, that he was, you know, falling behind in counts, that he was able to sort of power through all of that, might have been the most impressive thing of all last
night. Absolutely, because he made he made at least three that I can count really good 3-1 pitches. Got outs in 3-1. On one was a sinker. Another one was a curveball. And when you can throw a good pitch at 3-1, put it in the strike zone, and get the guy out, that's good pitching.
That's great. That's everything
right
there. If you can do that as a pitcher, you're going to find yourself in some good situations after you find yourself in some tough ones. All right, we're off and running here. We do have some offensive notes to talk about from last night's game, aside from Brett Wallace and Corey Spangenberg. We'll talk about those when we return. Also, our buddy Eno Saris from FanGraphs, or as Kurt Bavakwa calls it, FanGraphics. He'll call in a little bit. We're going to talk to Eno about something he wrote today, which I found very, very interesting, and also just check in with him on some of the nuances of baseball. We've got your social media questions and comments coming up. If you're on Twitter, use the hashtag PadresSH. That's how you get in, and we'll take the tweets and whatnot as we go. Paul is here hanging out. Paul had one of the nicest tweets ever. I don't have it in the system. I apologize. But earlier today, how about this tweet from Paul? He said, going to see the Padres, you've got to stop by the Social Hour Studios and say hi to Jesse and Seth. What a nice thing for Paul to tweet. And then he follows his own advice and he stops by to say
hi. And he's up there.
What a nice man. Paul B. at Prime Boss. Good dude. Real good dude. All right, so we'll take a break, come back. All of that and more is coming up. Eno Saris, more talk about last night's game. Obviously, some talk about tonight's game, as well as your questions and comments. Hey, school is back in session, and College Night presented by Uber is back Thursday, September 24th, as the Padres take on the Giants at 6:10. A DJ will be spinning all night long on the Budweiser patio. Tickets are only $10 in advance at padres.com/college, padres.com/college. A little tugboat action out on the bay. We'll take a break, come back. More Social Hour right after this.
We're back to the AMR studio located in the Western Metal Supply Company building. It's more of Padre Social Hour.
Welcome back. Padre Social Hour presented by United. Game 3 of 4 between the Padres and the Rockies is coming up. A 6:10 first pitch tonight. And don't forget, 12:40 tomorrow. The day game, the makeup game for the rain out back in July, and there's actual rain in the forecast for tomorrow.
Right, there's 30%
chance. What is
going
on with the Rockies?
I know.
Stay away. And we got to go back there next week.
Right, and they've had all those rain outs and rain delays this year. Right, it's amazing.
You know who I blame for that?
Okay.
Two people, Warren Miller and Dinger.
Warren Miller.
Well, I mean, he's the X factor. He's new to the Rockies this year.
Right.
So I'm adding him to the list of people who I blame for the weather, and Dinger, the stupid dinosaur.
Which you would blame for everything, since your love of mascots.
No, I do love mascots. I had a conversation with Dinger last time we were in Denver, and next week I'll be filling in for Dick Enberg in Arizona and Colorado next week. And in Colorado, I've got some news that I'm going to hold for then involving Dinger.
Is Dinger going to be your color guy?
He is not. Mark Grant, little resemblance. But I did some investigative reporting on Dinger last time we were in Colorado.
Right?
I did. I have some information.
So is Dinger worse than Blooper? The old Padres mascot?
Nobody is better than Blooper. Nobody is better than Blooper.
We're talking about the mascot.
Correct. Everybody is better than Blooper.
Right.
Here. Yeah. Hey, we got some more to talk about from last night. I want to get to some other offensive things that happens, but I want to start with our Firehouse Subs sub of the game. That would be Brett Wallace. And look, it's an RBI fielder's choice. It's a walk-off. But Brett Wallace as a pinch hitter this year, Bill, incredible numbers and sensational value.
Right. Well, at one point, I mean, until his next to last appearance, he had seven straight pinch hits, which is an amazing feat to go out there seven times, cold off the bench, and get base hits. And in that, those weren't just singles. He had two doubles and a homer in there. I mean, he has really turned into a very good pinch hitter.
People have said that he doesn't smile. That's a thing people say about Brett Wallace, and I can see why they might say that. I finally sort of involved in a conversation with him the other day in the clubhouse. He's a really smart, friendly, engaging guy. I just don't know that he's a big outward emoter.
No,
which is fine. Not everybody is.
And you know what I always like to see somebody like Brett Wallace, that he's been here before. He's been up and down, and now he's back, and he knows what his role is, and he's embraced that role, and he's really turned himself into a very good ball player in that role.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a throwback role, because in the 50s and 60s, when you had a much smaller – you had rosters with many fewer pitchers, you would have – each team would carry not a designated hitter, but a designated pinch hitter. Mm-hmm. And
pinch hit specialist.
Right.
Mark Kotze.
Right.
Matt Stairs. A Lenny Harris.
Right. But in the 50s and 60s, that guy might get 80 or 90 at-bats a season.
Got it.
Because he'd be in there every game at some point.
Well, you'd have a lot of Firehouse Subs subs of the game.
Subs of the game, right. Yeah.
But for us, Brett Wallace, the Firehouse Subs sub of the game. Make sure to check out the new edition of Firehouse Subs at Petco Park or visit any of their San Diego locations in Point Loma, Escondido, or Encinitas. All right, all of this Brett Wallace talk leads us into our first Twitter question of the day. Bitter Beard Face, I like this guy. He's got a little cranky Ed in him. Sometimes he gets a little cranky, but this is a really good question, and he wants to know, hey, is Wallace in the plans for next year, maybe at first base? I like what his bat brings. He was, I believe, a non-roster guy in spring training
non-roster.
This year, and really impressed, during the time in Cactus League play. Started at AAA, waited patiently, got the opportunity, has obviously taken advantage of the opportunity, and so a very, very fair question from BitterBeard01. Where does Brett Wallace fit in moving forward, in your mind, Bill Center?
Well, for one thing, he's not under contract for next year. He had a one-year deal, so they're going to have to figure out, do they want him back? I'd like to see him come back. I think he's a very valuable player off the bench as a pinch hitter. He doesn't really have a position. His best position is third base. He plays some first base, but he's not a great defensive player, but he's a bat. And I like now with more road games, interleague play, and that role as a pinch hitter, I'd like to have him back. I really would.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any reason not to try and bring Brett Wallace back at this point. And look, if he's able to sign a contract somewhere, with an American League team that says, hey, we want you to DH four, five, six times a week, or if there's a National League team that says, hey, we want you to start at third base or whatever, great for him.
Right.
And congratulations, and you feel badly about it. But if he is open to that part-time role, again next year or willing to try, some other things in spring training, I'm with you. I say go for it. He's proved himself to be incredibly valuable this year. And, I remember in Philadelphia a couple of weeks ago having a conversation with Mark Sweeney, and we were talking Matt Stairs was there, and just about the art of pinch hitting. And to be able to have that mentality. And with Jeff Francoeur, we were talking about it because he had been a terrible pinch hitter his entire career, like a 130 pinch hitter.
Right.
Batting average wise. This year, a tremendous pinch hitter for the Phillies. And we were all talking about it. And he said, it's such a mentality thing. It's just different than anything else. And it's not a thing anybody can do.
It's a complete different approach. I mean, you're sitting there for seven or eight innings, and then you've got to really get fired up. And you're not going up against going up against somebody who's tired. You're going up against a top reliever most of the time, somebody fresh from the bullpen. You're seeing a fresh arm.
That's exactly right. And it's the pitch-to-pitch things, right. too. You don't have a previous at-bat to rely upon. You don't have a next at-bat to count on.
No.
You're getting one shot at this thing.
You got one shot.
And every pitch is so valuable, and you have to be more selective. And that was a big thing Francoeur was talking about, because obviously his reputation is not as a selective hitter. He's just totally changed his approach this year, and all of a sudden he, along with Brett Wallace, you know, one of the two best pinch hitters in the National
right.
League.
Now, the sad thing is about somebody in that position is those are always the last guy in the roster, and generally they do not have a major league contract going into the season. I mean, Francoeur didn't, Wallace didn't. You've signed them late. If they make a spot, fine. If they don't, you're not you don't have them on your 40-man roster. Those are always tough spots because those poor guys – are always looking for jobs in the winter.
Yeah, no, it's understandable, you know, from both ends.
Right.
And, you know, that's the reality of that landscape. All right, we'll take a break, come back. I want to talk a little bit more about last night's game, some of the other offensive moments. We're talking certainly Will Myers, Kemp, Solarte, everything going on with all of that. And after that, Eno Saris from Fangraphs is going to join us. We're going to catch up with Eno. And a reminder, you can send in your questions or comments, as Bitterbeardface did, using the hashtag PadresSH. He actually didn't use the hashtag, but we used his question anyway. But it makes it much easier for us to find your questions if you use the hashtag.
How'd you find it?
Well, he sent it to me. He sent it to at Jesse,
okay.
So
right.
I saw it there. But we keep the hashtag
right.
thing open, and that makes it a little more easy.
I was just going to ask you. I didn't know.
No, that's fine.
Right.
No, it was a good, curious question. You're a journalist. That's what happens.
Right.
Hey, by the way, Jordan Carruth was here yesterday as my co-host. You had picked on him when he was filling in for me last week.
No.
Yeah. You were really picking on him. But he brought a bunch of candy for you. It was very nice. We've got it here in the drawer. So during the break, we're going to get into it. And I want you to let me know, you know, which candy is your favorite.
I will do.
Okay. As your hometown pet retailer, Petco is proud to partner with the Padres in Petco Park. Thank you, San Diego, for sharing in our passion for pets and baseball. Petco, the power of together. Take a break. Come back. More on last night's game. More questions, more comments. And then Eno Saris of Fangraphs. This is Padres Social Hour from the AMR studio at Petco Park.
We're back to the show that gives you everything San Diego Padres. It's Padres Social Hour, presented by United Airlines.
Welcome back. I got some licorice for you.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do. Delicious.
It's not licorice.
Twizzlers, it says right on the thing, licorice.
No.
What do you mean no?
It's not licorice.
Why not?
Because it's not black licorice.
Right, it's red licorice.
Shouldn't be.
What? You're such a cranky old man sometimes.
No, I'm not.
It says licorice right on the package.
And by the way, Jordan Carruth's selection? Week.
I find the Sour Patch Kids rather delicious.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. Welcome back. Bill is here. He does not
You're under 30.
He does not like modern candy.
No.
Like I said yesterday, back in your day, what? Your parents gave you a brick. They sprinkled some sugar on it, and they said, here.
No.
Enjoy
no.
the candy bar.
No, we had Pez. We had black licorice. We had there were a lot of Baby Ruth, Snickers, things like that.
Well, Baby Ruth named after?
Babe Ruth.
Or was he named after the Baby Ruth?
No, yeah, right.
Yeah, no
chicken or egg.
Yeah, exactly. All right, anyway. Hey, last night, 2-1 win. All the talk about the ninth inning, understandably. Both the top half with the Arenado home run, but also the bottom half. And Spangenberg double, Barmas bunt, and Brett Wallace knocking in the game-winning run. Colin Ray, another hot topic of conversation.
You're choking on your
from last night.
Sour patch.
You know, it's sometimes after
yeah,
you the sour
okay,
candy,
right,
it stays in
gotcha.
Your mouth a little. But also last night, Will Myers' first home run back since going onto the disabled list, and that was fun to see because it broke up a scoreless game. Gonzalez Hermen in the top of the sixth inning relieves John Gray, who was on a very strict pitch count for Colorado, 75 exactly, in fact, which is what he threw. And Will Myers, not a lot of Southern hospitality there, Will. Well, welcoming Gonzalez Hermen to the game with a solo homer to open up the scoring. That was great to see.
Good, nice swing. It's good to see the swing. It's good to see that he can swing the ball like that and not have any pain.
Love
I mean,
it.
That's the greatest thing.
That's the whole point of him
right.
playing right now.
And now he's getting hits. Right. That's the whole point. Is you want him to go into the winter thinking, I'm back, I've got it, I feel good, I can't wait for next year.
You want him going into the winter not thinking about the wrist,
right.
basically.
Absolutely.
Of course it's fine.
Right.
Why
right.
wouldn't it be? And then he can focus on all the
exactly.
regular things that he's got to focus on to come back. So that was outstanding to see. Certainly got to mention Matt Kemp's single in that same sixth inning. That extends his reaching base streak to 28 games. It's a career high. It is the longest in the National League this year, which is a pretty big deal, obviously. And it's tied for the longest in Padre history,
right,
with Chase Headley back in 2012.
No, it's the longest since Chase Headley.
Oh, it's the longest since.
Right.
I misread the note. I apologize.
The Padre record for most consecutive games reaching bases, 56 by Ryan Klesko.
Okay. So he's got a ways to go,
right,
there.
He's
halfway,
in
fact.
He's the longest, right. He's the longest since Chase had 28.
Okay. So the longest since. But either way, really, really nice.
Right.
Solarte also got a hit last night.
By the way, in that streak of reaching base 28 straight times, he's got a 15-game hitting streak, a 5-game hitting streak, and a 6-game hitting streak.
So it's not that he's, like, going over four every night,
right,
with a walk,
like,
or hit by pitch.
It's not like he's drawing a walk.
Yeah.
He's hitting the ball.
So is Yanhervis Solarte. He's got a 9-game hitting streak right now.
And two doubles last night. He's the first Padre to reach 30 doubles this season.
Think about that.
I really like his stroke.
He's over 50 RBIs.
Right.
He's at 30 doubles for most of the last couple months or 6 weeks or whatever. He's been the leading hitter on the team. He's got pop. This guy has been a really, really significant contributor to this ball club.
And he hustles. He's a good – I mean, he really works hard. He really has worked hard to make himself a ball player.
Yeah. It's awesome. It's fun to watch.
Right.
Really just, you know, second big league season, getting this opportunity, you know, a long time waiting for that opportunity. And Solarte's been great. I also like now here at Petco, when he gets an extra base hit, like a double, and he had two last night, as you said, on the video board, the ribbon boards, Fast Arte.
Right.
Because Derek Norris earlier this year had called him
Slow Arte,
which he didn't love, but he understood. But now he gets a little Fast Arte when he legs one of those out.
You know, once he gets moving, he's got decent speed. He is very
– So you're saying it's out of the blocks.
Right. He is a very slow starter. I mean, when you watch him sometime, his first two or three steps are really slow.
Interesting.
Once he gets moving, he's pretty good. He can get triples because once he gets rolling, he can run. But it's interesting to see him get started.
I will always remember him being on first base, Matt Kemp at the plate in Colorado, triple away from the cycle, and I'm thinking to myself, and I might have even said it, but I was thinking, oh, God, Solarte, like, he's going to get in the way.
Right.
Like, I was worried that Solarte was going to get in the way, and he was able to come in and score, and everything ended happy there. We mentioned John Gray very much in passing, the Colorado starter. Tip of the cap, he was very good last night as well.
Oh, really good.
Cool to have a couple of rookies in the same division, and Ray and Gray both kind of showing their stuff on the same night because, you know, you have visions of these guys both developing over the next several years and continuing to compete against one another.
You know, there are some really nice young pitchers right now in the major leagues. Pitching now, starting pitchers, almost have become the running backs, like we were talking about last week. There's just so many things that can go wrong with arms that it's tough sometimes. I've almost started looking at young pitchers and thinking, God, I hope he doesn't have Tommy John, that it doesn't break down, that it doesn't go bad.
Because you're part of the game now.
You've seen it so many times.
You say that, but the other side of it now is that the return and the recovery, while not a sure thing, is more regular now than at any other point in time.
Right.
So there's hope for these guys most of the time. Not to say 100%. We've seen Corey Lubke and Josh Johnson, you know, here. But guys are coming back from it, and I don't want to use the word routine because for them that work is not routine. But you do see guys coming back, you know, regularly, much more so than ever before.
But it's a year off your career.
Sure, it is. But it's a year of not pitching also.
Right.
So maybe, I don't know. Certainly understand what you're saying. By the way, Elias Sports Bureau, always coming up with great notes, talking about Ray and Gray last night. Just the second time since 1900, the two rookie pitchers faced off in a game, neither allowing a run and each allowing two or fewer hits. So a little bit specific there.
Wow.
But the first time or the second time since 1900 in modern baseball history, two rookies head-to-head, both no runs, each fewer than three hits.
I think there would probably be an asterisk there since they both went six. Well, Ray went seven.
You Ray want them went, both pitching like 11 innings for this to count?
Well,
Is that what you're doing?
No, but I mean probably in the older – I mean –
I understand your point. They used to go the distance all the time, and so it was different. But still, that
I know.
Even
you're
in the last 35
me a
years,
again.
I have some black licorice. Right. Okay. We'll take a break.
You don't have any.
Eno Saris, we have red licorice.
It's not licorice.
It's licorice. Eno Saris of Fangraphs will join us when we return. At Evans Tire and Service Centers, buy two select tires and get two free. With quality name brand tires in 16 convenient locations, why shop anywhere else? Visit EvansTire.com, home of the buy two, get two. We'll talk swinging with Eno Saris of Fangraphs when we return. Padres Social Hour, presented by United.
Welcome back to the AMR studio. Live inside Petco Park, this is Padres Social Hour.
Welcome back. Padres Social Hour presented by United. Third game of four between the Padres and the Rockies coming up. San Diego now 16-4 against Colorado in the last 20 games between the two teams here at Petco Park. Last night, a fun 2-1 walk-off victory after a Colin Ray performance that was the best of his young career. Seven shutout innings. Brett Wallace, Corey Spangenberg, Clint Barmas provide the winning run in the bottom of the ninth inning. And we'll talk more about that as time goes on. I want to step aside from the Padres specifically, though, at this moment and open up the old Cholula hotline. Our buddy Eno Saris of Fangraphs is going to join us. He's on Twitter, at Eno Saris. Wrote a really interesting story today at Fangraphs.com today. And I'm going to read the headline, Eno, and then we'll get into it. Hitters, quit chopping wood. Don't go for backspin. And it seems like forever, right? We've always heard, you know, coaches or whatever say, hey, when you're swinging your bat, just like chopping wood with an axe, just to chop the wood, swing down at the ball. And, you know, you talk to some of the most successful hitters in baseball, and their message was basically, no, none of that.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty surprising to me. I just figured that, you know, the stuff that we'd heard in high school and when you were younger and stuff, that was still going. But turns out our amateur coaches have led us astray.
All right, I think we're having some phone difficulties with Eno. We'll have Blooper try and call him back. We'll talk amongst ourselves as they try and work that out. But, yeah, it's an interesting article. I mean, he's got strong quotes from, like, Bryce Harper and Jimmy Rollins, respected, established guys saying, no, none of this chopping wood thing.
No.
That's not how you swing a baseball
bat. I've always disagreed with that stroke too. I like the traditional baseball stroke. Swing it.
Just swing it.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Go for it.
No, I mean, and it's about backspin as well. You often hear people say backspin makes the ball travel further. And they said, well, yeah, in batting practice, you can make longer, prettier home runs by putting backspin on the ball. But when you get into a game situation, if you're thinking about that, you're not making, you know, sweet spot contact, you know, or you're lessening your chance to do so, I guess would be the thing.
And you're actually swinging through a different arc. I mean, you're not tracking the ball as much as you are hitting it at a specific spot where the two meet. I mean, I like the swing that tracks the ball, that hits the ball head on. I like the pure swing. I don't like these chop swings.
All right, Eno is back with us on the Cholula Hotline. Eno, the science behind this maybe in layman's terms.
Well, I mean, I guess the easy science is that the spin of the batted ball does not matter. You know, if you do get more backspin, that increases the drag in the air. And so even if it does have some lifting properties, the drag in the air, you know, counteracts that. And so basically they did a closed experiment where they closed the roof in Minute Maid, and they just checked, you know, different spins going out and how far the ball went, and backspin didn't matter. So, you know, if you put aside that part, then you say, okay, well, backspin doesn't really matter as much as we've been taught to think it does. Then you're talking about what's the best swing to make contact, solid contact with a pitch. And I think, you know, given that, you know, the strike zone's gotten really low, and there's more and more pitches in the bottom of the zone, and pitchers are going for ground balls more and more, I think a swing that matches that swing, that plane of that pitch coming in, is going to be the most successful. So it may, to some old school, you know, fans of baseball, may look like people are golfing, people are dropping their back shoulder, and that they've got uppercut swings, but really they're matching these pitches that are coming in, which are coming lower and lower in the zone.
You know, this is Bill Center here. I totally agree with you. I've always thought that the best swings are the ones that go directly at the ball, try to hit the ball on the plane. What do you make of it when you hear a scout say, well, he doesn't, his swing doesn't put loft on the ball?
Yeah, I think that's you know, it's about matching that plane. So maybe their back shoulder doesn't drop enough. Maybe they are still kind of chopping at it. Maybe they've been taught that a level swing across the, you know, a level swing across, as in flat across the zone, is the way to go. Where I, you know, the best hitters I think today are guys like Chris Bryant, you know, Bryce Harper, Josh Donaldson. They're telling me that, you know, they have to match their shoulders to the pitch coming in, and that does mean dropping the back shoulder. And you know, you drop your hands to the zone, and that gets you, that gets your hands on plane with whatever pitch comes in, and then most of the time you're going to be even lower and sort of try to, you know, pick that ball up and put loft into it.
You know, I say this every time we have Eno on, because I think he does as good of a job as sort of marrying math and science with real life and anecdotal evidence as of any baseball writer. Honestly, I mean that sincerely, at Fangraphs.com, because you have a scientific principle or theory or study, and then you say, okay, let me go talk to these guys about it. So you're not just saying, hey, there was a study done and it says this. You're then hearing from a Bryce Harper and a Jimmy Rollins and a J.D. Martinez and a Josh Donaldson and whoever else, kind of saying, yeah, no, that's the way I think about it. And obviously they're talking about it in unscientific terms. Everybody should check out the article for sure. Fangraphs.com. Eno Saris, quit chopping wood. Don't go for backspin. Some really interesting things on hitting.
I've got, you know, when you did your study on the chop swing, did you find at all that you have a harder time making contact with the chop swing?
I didn't actually. The chop swing part was that was the part that I kind of went to the players with. I told them about this backspin, got their input on backspin, and then I talked to them about the chop swing. And so mostly the players, yes, they said that making contact is really hard, because with a chop swing, you're kind of swinging down to a point, and you think the ball is going to be somewhere, and you're
right,
swinging to that point directly. And if the ball is at all different from what you thought it's going to be, and that seems like a ridiculous idea, because the pitchers are throwing all these bendy things now. You know, if the pitch is a slider when you thought it was a cutter, you know, you're much better suited for that if you're down in the zone and you're coming through the zone, and then you can kind of, you know, have some bat control and try to get to that pitch, maybe foul it off, you know, maybe put it in play. Whereas if you're chopping right to that point and you miss it by a half inch, that ball's going under your bat.
Eno Saris of Fangraphs.com is with us. He's on Twitter at Eno Saris. He is also on the Cholula Hotline. One of the other hot topics around baseball, we'll move on from the story for a couple of minutes. You know, September call-ups, and we've had our fair share of 3.5-hour games in the last week or so, you know, and a lot of pitching changes and relievers coming in. Angels and Dodgers the other night went 3:52, three right. hours and 52 minutes with 14 relievers used in a game that was 7-4. We all have our own ideas, I guess, you know, about...
We had the four pitchers in a one-inning game.
We had that as well. you know, some people say, hey, limit the pitching changes. Other people, and this is kind of my camp, say, what about just like an active roster on a given day where the managers only have access to X number of relievers or bench players? Where do you fall in on all of this, and do you think it's an issue at all?
You know, I asked A.J. Hinch about this, and he said, well, it's tricky because every team has, you know, different rosters, and they call up different guys, and they have different goals for all these guys and how much they're going to use them and how much they want to develop them. So, you know, I don't really want to take the practice away because it does give us a chance to see some young guys, but the number of those young guys that we see is going down every year. So, you know, I don't want to change baseball. I don't want to change the rules for every game. So I don't really like limiting the number of pitching changes. I like what you're talking about, or just make it a 30-man expansion instead of, you know, the entire 40. That allows some teams to bring up a couple guys, but it doesn't turn everybody into a 20-reliever monster.
That's setting it at 30 is a pretty good idea.
All right. We'll take this to Rob and to the union. We'll see what we can't get done. Right. How about that? We got a few different ideas. Hey, Eno Saris is on Twitter at Eno Saris, E-N-O-S-A-R-R-I-S. The story today, Fangraphs.com, about backspin and swinging. And if you're a little league parent, a high school player, whatever, it's an interesting read. And
I would imagine if you're a mathematician.
Sure. If you like the sciences, you can get into that as well. Or if you're just a baseball fan, some really interesting things. Eno, really always good to visit with you, man. We appreciate the time, and have a good night.
Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. Eno Saris on the Cholula Hotline. Cholula Hot Sauce will elevate the flavor of your food with its delicious blend of unique peppers and authentic spices. Cholula, the flavorful hot sauce with the iconic wooden cap and proud partner of the San Diego Padres. All right, Bill. Interesting.
I've always thought that and I've seen guys with chop swings and trying to put the ball on the ground. I've always thought that you have a less opportunity to hit the pitch with the chop swing because if you're swinging level, you're swinging with the plane of the pitch, yes, you're going to miss it at times. But if you're swinging with the plane, you're on line with the pitch. When you're a chop swing, you're swinging through the plane, and your timing has to be absolute, or the ball is either your bat's through before the ball's there or it's through after the ball's there.
Makes a lot of sense. And now we have some science and some anecdotes to back it up. All right, we'll take a break.
And remove the backspin.
There you go, because who cares now?
Right.
Doesn't matter. When we return, some more Twitter questions coming in. The hashtag is PadresSH. You can join us that way, and we'll see what everybody's talking about. Get to those. Thanks again to Eno Saris. Padres Social Hour presented by United continues right after this.
We're back to the AMR studio located in the Western Metal Supply Company building. It's more of Padres Social Hour.
Welcome back, Petco Park. Padres Social Hour presented by United with Bill Center. I'm Jesse Agler. Thanks for hanging out. Whether you're watching on Fox Sports San Diego, watching at Padres.com/Social Hour, listening on ESPN 1700, or hanging out here at the AMR studio, Petco Park. We appreciate you making us a part of your Wednesday evening. Reminder, a 6:10 first pitch tonight as James Shields is back out on the hill to take on Chris Russin, who threw a 5-hit shutout against the Padres at Coors last time we saw him.
Right.
Coors, a 5-hitter.
He was very sharp.
He
was really sharp.
Now he's a good pitcher. Coming off another complete game, too. He beat the Giants.
Today we got to 6:10 because this was supposed to be the getaway day, and you got to beat that curfew for flights departing Lindbergh. So we had the 6:10. I was surprised they didn't move it back to 7:10 when the rainout came.
And they added tomorrow's game.
Right.
Probably, people had already made their plans, that kind of thing. But, yeah, tomorrow, 12:40, the makeup game and the final game of this four-game series. Let's take a look at the lineup for the Padres tonight in the third game of this series against the Rockies. It's presented by United Airlines. Proud to fly the Padres and fans to every away game. United, fly the friendly skies. Myers, Solarte, Kemp, Upton, Justin, Jerko, Norris, Spangenberg, Upton, Melvin, and Shield. So Myers at first, Jerko at short, Norris behind the plate. Spangy starts again at second, Melvin in center. Jed Jerko, by the way, really, every day I like it more at shortstop.
I like him a lot at shortstop. I really didn't think that was going to work. And the more I see him, the more it's like, wow, he can do this. One thing he does very well at short, which is not a component of being a second baseman, is charge balls and throw across his body to first. Does that very well. Doesn't have the greatest range, but he's got quickness, and he's got good instincts, and he really positions himself pretty well. I've really liked how he's done it. And by the way, Pat Murphy today said Jed's probably opening some eyes to people that would think now, could this be his real position?
Yeah. No, I think it's a conversation that gets more and more serious each day. He's handling it nicely, as we said. And when he was on with us recently, he talked about, stretching the arm out a little bit and, having to make, throws. He kind of joked at second base, you're just sort of flipping it over there. Now at shortstop, they're legitimate throws, so he's stretching his arm out. But the throws have been good. Throws have been really good.
They've been
Jerko.
Very accurate, and they've been strong. And especially when he comes in on a ball, he really has a nice snap throw.
All right. Our Supercuts head-to-head challenge will come after the break. You and Blooper will be competing with one another. Only one man will win.
I'm fired up.
I know. Join the Padres for Pedal at the Park, a radio telethon and cycling event this Saturday night, benefiting Pedal and local cancer research centers. Participate in a one-hour cycling class on the field featuring a DJ, Padres game, post party, and more. To register, visit Padres.com/pedal. It's all for Pedal the Cause, Padres.com/pedal. That telethon begins at 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. It'll be on Fox Sports San Diego and on the Mighty 1090 and also on Padres.com. Hope you'll join us. It's going to be a very, very special day. Take a break, come back, wrap up Social Hour right after this.
From start to finish, it's the best 60 minutes of Padres talk you'll find anywhere. Now, from the AMR studio, it's more of Padres Social Hour.
All right, back with Bill Center. I'm Jesse Agler. Time for our Supercuts head-to-head challenge. We take a look at the scoreboard, Bill. You represent right. The couch. Blooper represents himself. And Blooper, as we head down the stretch here in September, has a two-point lead on the couch.
So he gave himself a win.
He is not the scorekeeper. I am. And he's up two.
So you took...
It's all fair and legitimate. We haven't done it in a couple of days.
Right.
We're not rehashing the argument. Okay. It was decided days ago. I'll toss you. Don't argue.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, you'll be out of here.
You
want
to go at it straight now?
You'll be in a hurry.
You took Solarte over Kemp then that one day.
Is that what happened? Is he even accurate? No, you're like, we've had like eight shows since then. I don't remember it. But you're on thin ice, mister. Don't make me – you're dressed like an umpire, but I'll throw you out.
How can you argue with me when you can't even remember what happened?
Who do you got in the Social Hour Supercuts head-to-head challenge? Blooper?
Solarte.
At Supercuts, they pay attention to every detail. The cut, the lines, the hot towel finish so you can feel sharp, clean, and ready to go. Find a Supercuts near you at supercuts.com. I'm going to go get Mike Malinsky, have him toss you out of here.
You don't even know
what a ball
strike. We're
back tomorrow, 11 o'clock in the morning. We'll talk to you then.